Have you made an honest review? Jump onto fifthwrist.com and read real takes by real owners about their watches. And of course, get involved and write about what's on your wrist. Fifthwrist.com is your independent space to talk watches.
Welcome to the Independent Thinking Show for Fifth Wrist Radio. This is a place dedicated to showcasing the great people doing interesting things in the world of horology. My name is Roman, and today I'm joined by my friend and fellow citizen of Frankfurt, the human dynamo himself, Mr. Klaus, aka Tapir FM on Instagram. Hello, Klaus. Such a pleasure to see you.
Hello, Roman. I'm really excited to be with you again. It was a long time.
I know we have a contract where we can only do so many episodes before listeners complain, so we have to stagger them stagger them around. But no, it's always a pleasure to do an episode. Hope you're doing well. It's December, so heading towards sort of Christmas, festive season, that kind of nonsense. Hope you're doing all right.
I'm fine. That was the Anglo-Saxon answer. The Germanic answer is we are very Germanic-lastic today, is I'm actually recovering from a cold. And I'm quite tired, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that show anyway, because it will be really exciting and I will be more awake after the show than I am now.
We hope so. Same goes for the listeners as well. Hopefully they're not dozing off. Right. Look, it's always a pleasure to see you. We do have some fantastic guests. So if you're feeling a bit tired, this is good. These guys will perk you right up, as we've discovered in before we start press record. These guys are going to be a hoot. So we have two special guests today. We have Peter and Albert of Zeitwinkel, which is an amazing indie brand, which we will talk about today. So Peter and Albert, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Hello, welcome.
Now, maybe tell our listeners who don't know you intimately, which one is Peter and which one is Albert, just so they know.
I'm Peter, hello.
I'm Albert.
This is going to be great. I can sense it already now. Thank you, guys. Thank you for joining us. And once again, thank you to Klaus for setting this conversation up. Klaus and I were just talking about one of the dangers of doing these podcasts is we connect with really passionate, interesting people who do really cool things. And as we've been diving into what you do, it's hard not to fall in love. And I'm sure our listeners will do the same. Very much looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Now, before we kick off, what we usually do is we'll do a drink check, a wrist check, and let's throw in a location check, because I think it's quite important just for our listeners to know where Zeitwinkel is and where you guys are as well. Let's do that. Let's do the formal, in inverted commas, side of things first, and then we'll go on. Go, Klaus.
I'm in Frankfurt, Roman, as you said before. My drink check is a Lagrein from South Tyrolia, from Südtirol, a red wine. My wife has a birthday party just before Christmas, and we are testing lots of wines to find out what's the best wine for her meal she's preparing. So I have to drink a lot in the last couple of days, in the next couple of days. My wrist check is for you, Roman. It's maybe easy to guess. It's the brand new Oxen Junior 5th Wrist Edition, where a dozen of people from Fifth Wrist came together and designed one special watch just for us, which Oxen Junior made possible. And I just picked it up in La Chaux-de-Fonds 2 weeks ago or so. And since then, I'm wearing it constantly.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And the other thing we should mention is this kind of in-depth alcohol-related research is what this podcast is all about. We always encourage that. So whether it's a birthday party or recording an episode, Klaus and I, we are assiduous about that. In-depth alcohol research to enhance your listening pleasure. All happy birthday for your wife as well. That's wonderful news. All righty. We'll throw to our guests. So Albert. Okay. And Peter, please go ahead. Tell us where you are.
I will start. If you're listening to this podcast, you have to imagine us a little bit like Waldorf and Stadler sitting next to each other in the Muppet Show. So we're sitting very close on a bench here, trying constantly poking at each other. Let's maybe start with the location. The company, our atelier where we make the watches, is in Saint-Imier, which is in the Swiss part of the Bernese Jura, to be more precise. So it's just at the edge of the Canton de Berne. We looked at several locations, and that was the one we settled on because it was unpretentious. It had everything we needed, And most of all possible suppliers were around us and even in walking distance. And we'll get more to that. But the three founders of Zeitwinkel are all from the southwest of Germany. And we are often working remote. So as at the moment, we're in the southwest of Germany, sitting next to each other like the two Muppets. And maybe drink or wrist check first? Which one do you prefer?
As the esteemed guests, we and Germanic guests said that, we'll let you choose.
Okay, we will challenge ourselves by doing the drink check first.
We are heavy water drinkers.
Yes, we have three incarnations of water.
Oh, wow.
This
is
a Chateau Tap.
Yes. Organic and fair trade. Yeah, well done.
Yes, organic fair trade water. And then we have a more German type of water, which is a local super micro brewery beer from our area, which is called Kronprinz, the Crown Prince. Quite fitting name for watchmaking. Mm-hmm. And the third incarnation is this here, which was given to us by our friend Brian. It's an Irish whiskey, Writer's Tears Copper Pot.
Oh, wow.
It's become a tradition that we drink that whenever we have a podcast or a video session with a watch club or something like that.
Actually, it's not really a drink. It's a medicine. It's for disinfection. Yeah.
Right.
Nowadays, now it's a season for constantly disinfect.
Absolutely, yes. And we do once
Other
again
than
encourage.
That, we strictly have water.
Yes, in some form, one form or another. Absolutely. Yeah. No, well done. I think once again, before we started rolling, you guys were more ready than the host. Well done. I can't match that level of preparedness.
It might come as a surprise, but we're both wearing a Zeitwinkel.
Oh, that must be embarrassing. Clashing.
Yes, that's why we have these sleeves over the watches. So I'm wearing the 273 degrees Saphir Fumé. Which has our large date movement with the patented large date at the 11th position, a sapphire dial that is transparent, yet very often not transparent, depending on how the light hits. And this is the version with the Fumé dial.
Mm. Well, I wear the very rare model, it's still the prototype, of the 126 degrees special edition.
Wow.
This looks a little bit like the Chrono Tempus I wanted to ask you later.
Well, it is, exactly.
Okay.
Yes, and the tribute to our friend.
Will be delivered hopefully soon.
Oh, well, tribute and hello to our friend Scaramanga, who's a friend of the podcast, part of the Fifth Risk crew as well. It's a sensational release. So well done, you guys. It's a brilliant addition. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amazing.
So what are you wearing?
I'll do my disappointing drink check first. So I'm just having a cup of tea because it is 6:51 a.m. in the middle of a week, unfortunately. So it's not even a Friday morning where I can say, yes, thank you. Yes. Albert is just pouring a rather generous dollop of special water, heavy water, shall we say, through the camera. Thank you. I'm sure we'll get onto that. And wrist check wise, Klaus and I are going to clash because I've got my oxygen Junior Fifth Wrist edition. It's one of 11 at the moment. Now, we should say to people, it is an open edition. So if anyone is interested, and it's a pretty killer watch, you can still get yours as well. There's no modifications. We've made it perfect. So you can certainly email James and you can get your own and join the club. So absolutely. That's lovely. Very fitting. You gents both wearing fantastic watches. Albert, you definitely get the rare matching drink check to wrist check because you've got a Crown Prince beer. And in my honest, humble opinion, the watch you've got is the Crown Prince of your collection. So I'm putting that in as a little link as well. And it's a sensational watch. We will definitely talk about that watch as well.
You're only saying that, Roman, because you don't know the beer out of that region where they're coming from. They always talked about south of Germany. It's called the Saarland, which is actually, we don't want it to get back after the war, but they decided to go back to Germany. There is no such thing that like a good beer from Saarland. But that just to let our listeners know.
Whoa. In former days, it was.
We need to cut this.
It was kind of Bavaria too. Yeah, Bavaria King comes from the Saarland today.
I'm not going to say that getting three Germans into a room lives up to any kind of stereotype at all. But we are 10 minutes in, and we are already arguing about beer, which is always fun. And also World War II, which is perhaps less fun. We're not cutting any of this out, by the way. This all stays because, you know, it's all very true to form, because we need to connect the watchmaking to the founders, to the honesty and integrity of the thing. So this is all part of the magic sausage that is the Zeitwinkel family. So this is great. This is great.
Just to let our listeners know, the area I'm grew up in and the Saarland is always, we pretend that we don't like each other, but in
Oh, we're definitely getting fact, that impression. Yeah, we're definitely getting
that
impression.
As a matter of fact, we love them. The small Saarland, we love them.
Yeah, they don't want to be like us.
Let's not go as far as love, but you can tolerate each other. And that's, look, in this day and age, that's all you can say. That's all you can say.
The area we come from used to be French, German, and even independent for a while. So there is actually a mix of cultures here. And we have the best of France, which is from where we live about 10 minutes, and probably some decent stuff from Germany too. So the Mosel wines are not too far from here. Luxembourg is 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
You can say we are very, Saarland is very well connected with France, changing history. We are quite Francophile.
Oh, very good. And once again, we're veering off very much away from watchmaking, and we will get back at some point in the next day or two. But I always find sort of areas of countries where there's a lot of cosmopolitan sort of mix of nations and mix of nationalities and cultures always produces really rich kind of tapestries and local cultures, whether it's cuisine, whether it's music, whether it's manufacturing. Always a good thing, I think, when you get these mix of countries and mix of nationalities and things. It does produce a really good sort of melting pot of ideas. So that's possibly how Zeitwinkel connects as well. That's lovely.
It's a little bit like how we connect to the area where we make our watches, because that's also, it's officially a bilingual canton. But it's a mix of cultures that clash. And unlike what most people think, a lot of the watchmakers are also not necessarily born exactly there.
Yes, absolutely.
And in this part, the watchmaking is definitely a lot influenced by French watchmaking.
Yeah.
You just make it better. Got it. 100%. Fantastic. Look, guys, probably a good place to start is maybe tell us and our listeners a little bit about yourself and also obviously about Zeitwinkel, the brand you co-founded in 2006. So you've already got a weight of history behind you. But tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Okay. Yeah, we are three founders with our partners. Some of our partners are in there as well. At least they're enduring what we're doing, which is sometimes a lot of work. And it's not very obvious where we're going, but at some point everybody finds out. We decided as friends to found a watch company after Peter had been in the watch business for quite some time, had been distributing watches outside of Europe. And in the years 2004, 2005, we discussed whether to start our own watch company because in that time, the tendency was to buy fairly standard movements at what was then a fairly low price, put it in a case that was not necessarily made all the way in Switzerland, sure, and then put a price tag of 5,000 francs on it because it had a nice brand and some nice testimonials claiming sure they liked the brand despite being paid for liking it.
Yes.
So at some point we decided if we want to do that, we have to start with a movement. And that was the rabbit hole that opened.
Yes.
We started the company in 2006. Our backgrounds are, I would say, diverse. Peter has a background in watchmaking, in watches. Although he's not a watchmaker, he could probably disassemble and assemble a watch fairly quickly nowadays. The third founder, Max, who cannot be here, but sent us his Instagram recommendation, of course.
Champion.
He's an arts professor.
Wow.
So arts and marketing. He used to be the dean of all art schools or arts universities in Germany. And he is the guy for the crazy ideas. So anything that is eccentric usually comes from him.
Not everything turns into reality, but at least we have crazy ideas. And I influenced them, of course.
Reality is
so
easy.
For example, when we developed our movements, we had a lot of time because it took 3 years at least. And Max decided we need a Zeitwinkel typeface, a font for computers.
I was going to ask you about the typeface, but go on.
That was probably not the most urgent and important thing to do, but he insisted we have that. So nowadays, all communication we have is in that typeface.
Very cool. I like hyper-focusing on small things to make them as good as they need to be. That's fascinating. So you guys started in 2006. And you went in with, we're going to make a movement, which is hard enough to do. And everyone says, that's the hardest thing to do. That's the worst. That's the stupidest idea you could do. If that's, right. Oh, excellent. I've got just flash of a prototype or something there. Oh, the movement, I think itself. Now, if it took two or three years to do, that would have been 2009, which would have been about the global financial crisis time.
It's all about timing, Roman.
Clearly. Absolutely. So maybe talk to us about that traumatic time, because I would imagine it's hard enough to get a brand going, but to... go on.
Yeah, see, 2008 was, let's say, the peak of this crisis.
Yeah.
And it was just during the time we did our development thing work and prototyping and everything. For God's sake, it did not really harm us because we were not really on the market yet. So we had nothing to lose. Right. We just could concentrate on developing and production and mastering production and prototyping and get the product finished. After the development, you have to get it finished. And a lot of know-how is not only the construction itself, a lot of know-how is to know how to do it, how to manufacture it.
Sure.
This is actually a very important part of the know-how.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did it work? Did you employ people in Switzerland, like engineers and watchmakers, for in that time to do a movement the way you basically described it? Or?
That was one of the reasons also we decided to, let's say, to place our manufacturing in Switzerland, because there also the manpower is limited over there. What constructors is concerned, at least we had a chance to find somebody, a very, very sophisticated engineer who designed, developed the base movement and the large date movement for us. And it also, we got a patent on our large date mechanism. That was a very important step we did towards that we built in Switzerland.
And the financial crisis actually helped, because at the time it was highly unusual that anybody, especially a small company, would have their own movement.
Absolutely.
And many suppliers wouldn't talk to us. They wouldn't even let us in the door. The financial markets blew up and you came to suppliers, only the two Porsches of the managing directors were standing in front of the building. Everybody else was at home.
Sure.
And you could actually talk to somebody. They would even make a coffee for you.
Some of their Porsches were missing some tires.
Look, you've got to sell what you've got to sell. It's the times were hard. It's one of those things where there are inflection points when things radically change. And I think three cheers to you for having the bravery to persevere, because I would imagine the mood around that time would have been very down in the whole country. But also for you guys to have the confidence in your ideas and your design and your thinking process. Say, no, nobody knows about us. The first thing we're going to do is this automatic, in-house automatic movement, while you're looking at a landscape of people not working and companies at a standstill. That is an incredible thing to think about. And that's why I said you started in 2006. You've got the weight of history behind you, because you would have gone through two or three financial meltdowns now, and COVID as well. It's an incredible thing to sail through as a young company. So amazing to you.
Yes, and those are the external meltdowns, and you obviously also have internal meltdowns where in the beginning, our partner that did the construction together with us folded towards the
oh, great
end or middle of the financial crisis. we had to take everything out and do
finalize it ourselves.
Yeah, we did several rounds of prototypage ourselves.
Wow.
Which good side is we know the movement inside out.
I bet.
We know most of the know-how is not in the technical drawings, it's in application and
sure.
how you actually make the components.
Sure.
And we have that in-house. But those and then quite a few other episodes were not really something we would want to have again.
It was cold water. We found ourselves from one second to another.
Yeah, absolutely.
But even if it was cold water, we kept swimming.
Yes, as long as you keep moving, exactly. Whether
it's
forwards
or backwards. Your muscles get tired and you're in cold water, but still, we kept swimming.
Oh, I think it's one of those things. I always think with indie anything, right? As long as you keep moving, whether it's forwards or backwards or even side to side, as long as you're making some kind of flailing motions, you're fine. You've got hope. No, absolutely. Now, the movement we should absolutely talk about because, once again, it's not every day that even a company that even an independent watchmaker who makes a movement typically doesn't start with the sort of movement that you guys made. You made an automatic movement, which adds a whole level of complexity. So why did you decide as the movement that you're going to have, and you still have now the 102, and now there's the 103, which has the grand date and the power reserve. But let's say, why automatic? Why that particular specs?
Very clear, Roman. You just hit the nail on the head. First, in these days, it was very uncommon that, as you already mentioned, an indie like us would start with such a comprehensive development. The majority of independents, still in our days, start with hand-wound movements.
Yep.
And they rely on ideas which are partly exist already.
Of course.
And we definitely wanted to set a sign. One sign was we wanted that everybody instantly would know that this is a known development. And this was, of course, much better to achieve with a mechanical, with an automatic movement, because very few had this in these days.
Sure.
Other than the large companies, only a few. And then we also wanted to have it because it's a much more sophisticated movement and people like automatic movements. Also, they rely on other brands. They buy watches with hand-wound movements too because they just lack the automatic system. Yeah, we wanted to just set a mark. That's it.
Gotcha. I understand. It is a lovely movement to behold as well. So for our listeners who don't know Zeitwinkel, shame on you. We're all thinking that. But pause this, go look it up, have a look. It's a lovely brand. Hopefully you're getting the sense of that now. But also have a look in the movement. The movement's really beautiful. One of the questions I had, when you partially explained it, was your styling of kind of what you do is quite Germanic in its, it relates to the fine tradition of German watchmaking. You know, you've got bridges out of German silver, the Grand Date, all that. But your watches are not German. They are Swiss. They're made in Switzerland. Does that have any friction or do people know? No?
For us, it's a natural consequence of the mix of people that work in the workshop, that work on the project, or worked when it was still a project, and the history of watchmaking. We have a three-quarters plate. We use untreated German silver. Right. We cannot hide anything.
Yes.
You shouldn't touch it because you see fingerprints forever. And any mistakes you make in decoration are there. They will not go away. You cannot cover them with anything. We have single barrel 72-hour power reserve. We decided not to put the large date where everybody would put it, but where only a few were able to put it. It might come across as a Germanic design, but then you also have a lot of Swissness in there and even Swiss-French elements. And we just thought if we, as an outsider, somebody who comes from a small area of Germany where the people from Frankfurt beat on us all the time. We thought, let's not try to do what everybody does, but let's just express what we like, what we think looks good, what we think works well. So the movement is also very solid. It could be much thinner, but we wanted a movement that somebody could service in 100 years.
We have to confess, of course, that the style reflects, of course, in a certain degree, our taste.
Of course.
But as Albert already pointed out, you find many watches with used design in Switzerland, which are typical Swiss. The fact that we are Germans probably causes you to think that this would be probably a very special German design, which it is not. It's a mixture, but it reflects the taste, reflects our taste.
It is a really, as an outsider who doesn't live in either of the Germanic sides that were featured in this podcast so far, looking at it from across the ocean, it is a really fascinating mix of Germanic elements on one side, like the three-quarter plate and the bridges and even the Grand Date, which is very typical of some brands we don't need to mention. But you're right, when you flip the watch over, it does have that kind of sensuousness around it, which is very much non-Germanic, if you like. The rotor has this lovely curve to it. And the hands, I love the hands on your watches. They're such unique shape and finishing. It's a phenomenal thing that such a small brand can, like you guys, spend so much love and care on these small elements, which is to be commended.
We actually had 3 years when we started the movement design. Obviously, right. We knew what we wanted, had the specs, and then it takes quite a bit of time to translate everything into metal. Until you really have something that really works, it takes quite some time, and it takes a long time after that. So we only started designing the watches, apart from the basic idea, what it would look like, and where the large date would be. We only started that during that period, and we had a lot of time, and occasionally we got Max to veer away from designing fonts and to actually look at designing watches.
There is one very important aspect why we often get comments when people say that we have just a nice golden, how can I say it? No.
Ratio?
The design is just so clear and it matches each other. It's
golden ratio. I know what you mean.
The reason why is that we parallelly developed the design with the features of the movement. Meaning, let's start with the design. The large date is dominated, version is dominated by the large date, the power reserve indication, and the large small second, which shows a second like a pocket watch.
Yes.
And yeah, you also see, because of the large diameter of the small second, you should instantly recognize that this cannot be a movement, a mass-produced movement, because they usually, or they can only use these small seconds.
Yes, you can always
and
tell.
And then the large date on the left side, the power reserve indication on the right side, they just sit on this large, small second. And the gravity holds them together. And if you slightly change the size of, let's say, the triangle of the power reserve indication, the position, the details, everything optically falls apart. So we had to try first the design to get it working together, that you say, man, yeah, that's it. Now you just get everything on the right position. It holds each other together by gravity. But then you can do this only if, of course, the functions of the movement are on the right place. And that's why we could, because we parallelly were developing our construction of the movement and the design, we could go back and forth and adapt each other and get each other matching. If you have a ready movement, the design has to follow your movement.
Yeah, of course.
We could put everything on the right place.
In the way of designing both of them, you actually said, okay, I'll change the movement's structure slightly to make the design the way I wanted.
I was fishing for the word a few minutes ago. That's why we got this harmony.
Right,
beautiful. Yes, yes.
Only because of the fact that we could do construction of design and the movement together, parallelly.
It is very interesting. So I'm always fascinated by the origin stories of things and certainly how decisions get made, particularly if you're doing something from scratch, as you guys were. Because you're right, Peter, if you buy a stock ETA movement, Unitas movement, Schwarz-Etienne movement, Parmigiano-Fleurier movement, whoever's doing your supplied movements, you're locked into the distances because that's where the arbors are, that's where all the wheels are. What I'm always interested in is what comes first, whether it's a design which you then build around to accommodate, because certainly when we talked to our previous guests, we had a chat with Madame Genter about how Gerald Genter worked on the podcast. And that's very much was design first. You build around that, except for a particular model. It was the Grand Sonnier. But it was very much design-driven watchmaking. And then I remember having a chat with, so not to drop names, but with Roger Smith. And his thing was also very much design first. I want to see what I design the dial and then I build my mechanics underneath to match. I need to know where the dial will go, where the elements of the dial will go, so that I can build the under the dial structure and all the wheels to go around that. Sounds like you guys had a much more evolutionary kind of process where you said, we roughly know what it looks like, but because we are designing the mechanics, we can move the... That's very interesting. That is a very interesting thing. I would imagine horrendously expensive way to design things, do stuff. It's not the cheapest shortcut to go, oh, it's going to be like this, make it once, and it's done. So,
well, we're not about shortcuts at all. That's one thing that is super difficult to get across.
That's why I wanted to make sure we talk about it. That's why I put shortcut in, because I wanted you to say that.
You
that's
triggered
right.
me.
That's what I tried to do here. I do my research. I know the key phrases. I know the key phrases. That's it. Klaus does the geography triggering. I do the extra watchmaking triggering.
But that's actually the point. We, as three very independent guys, all with their own minds and maybe a little thick-headed, here and there, we could do what we wanted. It was a clean sheet, which is always tempting, but it's also dangerous.
Sure.
And a lot of what you said is expensive. We paid in time as well.
Yes.
So it costs horrendous amounts of money to create your own movement. And the very horrendous part starts when you think you have it done, because then you get it working. But we also invested lots of time. And that's what nowadays you don't see that much, because you either have a deadline or you have a corporate organization that tells you it needs to be done by the next fair.
Sure.
Or the deadline, we have invited journalists, it needs to be done. And for us, that is completely the other way around. We issue a new watch model when it's ready. Feel it's time. We have a good idea, we have a nice dial, we have something that would improve what we are already doing. It's not because we flip the calendar and there's another date and now we need a new watch.
Tiffany blue dials. It is the season for Tiffany blue dials. Let's pump
those out. You're giving me
an
idea.
Please don't. Please don't. Klaus and I will crowdfund for you not to do that, if you like. That's fine. That's fine. We should always salute to our Tiffany blue dial owners, particularly Rolex and Nautilus.
Nothing wrong with that.
Thank you. Let's not go that far. You don't want to encourage
people. Don't forget the moon's watch.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yes. That's the Tiffany blue that stays on your wrist when you take the watch off. Sorry, we did veer off. Talking about the models that you do. Once again, it's one of those things I'm really fascinated about. You guys are a small company. We'll talk about naming of models in a second. But just to acknowledge the sheer number of models that you produce as a small manufacturer is quite astounding. I counted 9. I'm sure I've missed 1 or 2. Maybe tell us about, let's talk about the convention of naming first, because you guys have a very unique way of naming your models. And also why you feel there's a need to build on the collection. Because you could just make 1 or 2 models and this is what we do. You keep expanding your oeuvre, if you like. Maybe talk about that.
So let's start maybe with the naming.
Yes.
For those few who don't speak German, Zeitwinkel means time angle, measurement of the true time. So it was quite logical that we would use measurements of angle, degrees, to name our watches. And depending on how you catch me, I will tell different stories about how we came up with the exact numbers. Some claim I tell stories where alcohol was involved.
You
I don't remember.
At
the end, we just wrote down some numbers and took it from there. But for example, the Chrono Tempus edition that Peter is currently wearing, the 126 degrees, there's a logic behind that because it has a 12 and the 6. So 1, 2, 6 names the watch.
Ah, okay.
Was this the logic after naming or logic pre-naming? Did you name it 126? Actually, if somebody asks, it's a 12 and a 6. Or did you say, oh, 12, 6.
Well, we have to give credit to them. Credit where credit's due.
Oh, you know, Scaramanga, Francisco does an amazing, he's a great guy. He's part of the Fifth Wrist family as well. Great taste. Always, once again, always chooses the partners very well for the stuff that they do. So that's credit to him and to you guys. And the results are often, always spectacular. So that's a lovely addition. So well done, you. So,
thank you very
but
much.
You do have quite, it's quite a collection. You've got two-handed watches, you've got three-handed watches. It is quite a family that you've built up in a comparatively short time as well.
Yes, but it's still, it's a family, as you say. It's not five families. It's not many
it's
different
cohesive.
Functions.
Yeah,
we're not trying to do everything. And you have to see, we've been doing this for 16 years now. And unless I'm completely wrong, you can still buy every watch model we ever made. So while there are some watches that can be ordered, they might not be ordered several times a day.
Yes, yes, sure, sure. So at the moment, you've got, I've got too many things to talk to you about. So, because you guys do interesting things in an interesting way. So let's talk, actually, let's talk complications first. So you have two automatic movements, movement 102 and 103. And the family watches, you have two-handed watches, three-handed watches. You do have complications as well. The model 273, which is what you've got at the moment on your wrist, it's got a power reserve and a grande, and we'll talk about the sapphire dial in a second too. Is there a reason you stopped at those complications, or do you think at some point there'll be a moon phase joining the family, there'll be a chronograph, or do you see it more as a purist expression of time, date, power reserve, that's as much information as you need on a dial? What's the reason for having that?
Of course, we have ideas and plans for the future. But when we're talking about movements, because we develop it and we would have to manufacture it, it would again be a quite something.
Understand.
let's say it would require a lot of energy you put in.
Of course. Understood.
And we have this for the future. But right now, we have to keep on building the brand further.
Sure.
We cannot just start, keep on developing more movements.
Sure.
We have to get more people to know our brand.
Yeah,
and we chat each other again to get to the next step, to decide again to make an investment.
I bet. Yeah, and when I was asking about the complicated stuff, that wasn't at all a criticism, and I hope it didn't come across that way.
I didn't take it as that too.
Yeah, it's more that I like the way you're fleshing out, you're building out a family in a very, very cohesive way. So it's just one of those things where I think the temptation and the misstep that a lot of brands make is they try to make everything. We make a two-handed watch, or we need to have a chronograph and a diver and a tourbillon and a minute repeater and a moon phase. And at some point it loses its cohesiveness, if you like. It's harmony, the word to use. So I think what you do is really good in that kind of stepped evolution. The other thing I find really interesting, and once again, quite unique for a small company, is you make some of your models in two case sizes. So you make a model in a 30, like a 188, for example, and a 181, I think they're the
39
the two.
And 42.5.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's quite, was that something that you always wanted to do, or was that a customer-driven
request? It was already on the map in the beginning, because we work with some statistics, and of course statistics change with more experience by research, but we can still say that 32.5 represents a high degree of what people wear. So
sure,
it's not 43, it's way too large. A 41 might be too tiny, and 42.5 would just, let's say, an estimate, just match, let's say, 65 or 70% of people who could feel comfortable with it. And they also could be comfortable with 39. Yeah. Those are the 2 meters which we think are, represent. Yeah.
Cover the most people. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to be annoying and ask, I'm going to be annoying and ask a question that I'm sure you get asked a lot, which is, would you make a smaller size? We don't want to call them ladies' watches, but smaller diameter watches. Would that something that's doable, something that's not doable?
What's a very slim wrist. I was challenged by a watch enthusiast in Japan 2 weeks ago to try on his watch. He said it will never fit you.
Right. It's a DSLR.
But I'm wearing a 42.5 watch. And I also often wear the 39 millimeters. So the way we place the lugs, those watches actually work on slim wrists, but they also work on manly wrists like Peter has. Given the size of our movement, we could probably go maybe 1 millimeter less.
Sure.
If we forced it, if we took some stability out. But that's not something we want to do.
No, fair enough. That answers. And look, 1 millimeter does not make a difference.
You touched a good point. The question we often get is whether we make ladies' watches.
The ladies wear, by the way, large watches.
Yeah, which is why that's not the phrase we tend to use here, because it carries... Whenever I hear ladies' watches, it doesn't conjure up good horological things. In my mind, ladies' watch is essentially a worse version of a men's watch with either with diamonds unnecessarily on it, or it's a quartz thing that just gets pumped out for Valentine's Day and Christmas. So we don't tend to think of it as that way. We tend to refer to them as smaller diameter watches. But look, and the other thing I think is quite interesting is the case size itself is not really that indicative of anything. We actually need the total lug-to-lug size, because you can have a 39 watch, which is only 44 millimeters total size, versus a 36 with a really long lug, with some of the dressy ones where it's actually longer. So you're quite right. So, and that, if it covers most of your clients, that's great. No problems at all. Tell us a little bit about where the components for your watches come from. So you proudly say most of them are made in the local area. Does that limit what you can do, because you stay perfectly local?
There's only one limitation, and basically two limitations. It's time and money. The reason so maybe let's start with the components.
Yes.
Our cases are made in a traditional watchmaking area in Germany, and everything else is made in Switzerland within usually half an hour of driving.
Amazing.
We have some partners that are within walking distance, and we actually walk there.
Fantastic. Oh, I love that.
So in Saint-Imier. And the reason we went to Saint-Imier is partly that. We wanted a place that smells like oil. When you're in our manufacture, it's really handmade. It's work. We don't have a show assembly.
Cooling liquid.
Yeah, it's cooling
liquid. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's oil. That's what it smells like. We love it that way.
It's perfume for us.
Exactly. And we often stand in the middle of the watchmaker's desks, and it looks like a workshop. It's really a workshop. It's not something that's made up for show, and we have some glass, and you walk behind the glass, and everybody's wearing nice white coats and makeup.
And nice clean desks.
Yeah,
that's right. Yes, and an old man hunched over, just putting the screw in. Yes.
Like the same screw. The guy that fills the pralines with a white hat, and then you have that machine that makes a million pralines every minute.
Exactly. Yes. Now, yes, we were going to talk about the palage. Yeah.
So the reason was really to go to Saint-Imier, because we have these suppliers there, and the reason why many good companies that make watches are not using really Swiss suppliers or partly Swiss suppliers is it might take a long time until you get your components, and it is more costly.
How did it work for you? You came from Germany, and you didn't go to a private label company and say, build me a watch and I want to sell it under my name. You came from Germany and said, I want to build a Swiss watch in Switzerland. Yeah. Did they say, oh, yes, that's all we were waiting for? Or was it rather a hard time, which is what I imagine?
They gave us a hard time in the beginning, you're right.
Yeah.
But we convinced them.
But that's exactly what we did not want to do. The whole project started because especially Peter was fed up with those watches with the enormous margins, but no value reflecting the price.
Yeah,
we wanted, that was the motto from the beginning, an honest watch, no shortcuts. And we're very often taking too few shortcuts. We could probably shave a lot of expenses from the way we make watches, but we don't. You would see it. At some point you would see it, and many others have gone that way. They have reduced decorations in areas where you don't see them. They have made parts simpler. We didn't.
That makes it so difficult for us to find the right watchmakers, because watchmakers have to be very well trained, and they are very hard to find because we just don't do assemble watches. We manufacture and we assemble the components. We put the rivets in our wires. Yeah, we put together the smallest components, which is a hell of a work. Very difficult to do.
Yeah, I think the way you describe the process, it's the fingerprints. We usually say here, the fingerprints of the watchmaker are very much in the watch, because it goes through something. It's a good thing they're made of German silver, so hopefully they're wearing gloves, because otherwise you definitely see them. But it's very much a human driven process. I think you've got a little, I think it was like a 45 second video on your website, which just says, here's a brief thing about Zeinfunkel. And there's a shot of there. We don't use robots. We don't pay the actors or ambassadors. There's a nice little inspirational statement.
It's maybe
there,
a little in your face. Yeah.
That's fine. I was born, I grew up in the Ukraine. So that's in your face kind of bit of propaganda works on me every time. I'm ingrained in that. So it's no problem. There is something really honest and to be admired in a brand that actually just says we don't do shortcuts. There are easier paths for you to travel, particularly now after 16 years rather, of being thing. There are many independent watchmakers and watch companies that have gone the easier route after a few years, or not always to their benefit and often to their detriment, where they go, oh, we're comfortable, we've got a base, we can just ease up a bit and do more profit margin or cut here because who's going to know. But you guys are clearly holding yourselves to a higher standard, which is a hard thing to do, business sense.
Yes, it was. There are probably much easier things to earn money. It's obviously, if you want to make a small fortune, start a watchmaking company.
Clearly.
Only if you start with a big fortune.
That's right. Oh, that's well said. That should be a slogan.
But there are quite a few there are super advantages. We can decide, right? If we sit in a restaurant, all three of us together, and we decide we want to do a certain model or we don't want to do something, we don't do it. There are also quite a few challenges, such as finding skilled watchmakers. So hopefully many watchmakers are listening to this.
Okay.
Look at the show notes. You will find us there. And Peter will take your call. And we hope you can start Monday.
Doesn't matter if they come from Australia or Tasmania. If they're good, we take it.
Oh, no, we won't send you our good ones. We'll send you our kind of less good ones, but we'll send you somebody. Let's put it this way. We will send you somebody.
That's very kind of you.
No, look, we can.
Please, let somebody we have to send back again.
There's no return policy. I'm very sorry. We struggle to hold on to our talented watchmakers. I hope there is some, let's get serious for a second. If there is somebody listening who is actually genuinely enjoying what they're hearing about a company that the sort of watchmaking they want to do, which is that independent with integrity, it takes how long it takes to make a good product, definitely get in touch with Zeitwinkel. We will definitely put a link in, because those sort of companies I would imagine are hard to find now. The typical stories I hear of watchmakers who get in contact with us are typically saying, we are really disillusioned with the industry. We go to watchmaking school, we do years and years of study, and then we come out and all we do is put a rotor on or we just do battery change. Exactly. That robotic kind of passionless, emotionless, automata level stuff. So yeah, absolutely. You guys should be treasured.
If you live in the UK and you want to do the same thing but not leave the UK, call Dave from Garrick Watches.
Yes,
now we should. Same problem.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah. And
he's
should
rowing the same boat.
Exactly. Yes, we should definitely do a shout out to Dave at Garrick, Dave Brailsford, who was a previous guest on the podcast. And he actually, we'll go to Instagram recommendation later, but you guys were one of his Instagram recommendations. And I think from memory, he said something like Langer and Zona quality at quarter of the price or something. It was something like that. But he very much talked very highly about the integrity with which you approach watchmaking. And he's doing something similar and wind to his sales in the UK. And they're doing some really cool stuff with their S5 and S6 model now, in-house movement. They're kicking goals. But it's lovely to hear. For me as a collector who's not an enthusiast, who's not technical, it's wonderful to know that there are crazy people in the world prepared to do the sort of hard stuff that you guys do for people, for silly people like me to enjoy. All speed to you.
Thank you very much.
Could I ask, what's your, we're talking about watchmakers, what's your kind of rough production numbers every year? How big a team do you have? Just if you can talk about that.
We currently have 3 watchmakers.
Yep.
And we make, depends on availability of parts very often. Let's say we have a special dial that might be delayed by half a year or a year.
Wow.
That influences the number of those watches we can make. But it's usually in the low 3-digit.
Yep.
In some years, it was in the high 2-digit numbers.
Wow.
So we always find it super funny when large exclusive companies issue limited series of 250 pieces at 500,000 Swiss francs.
Yes,
that's each super one, exclusive.
I guess exclusivity is who you compare it to. If you compare it to the number of molecules in the universe, it's very much exclusive.
Yes.
Hardly any, that's right.
I'm not trying to ridicule it, but what we do is quite exclusive because we just have limited capacity. Again,
yeah,
the no shortcuts thing. We could change the way we make watches and buy a machine that sets the stones, for example, the jewel.
Sure.
But we don't. Or we could outsource that and have somebody play around with it and hope that they get some of the jewels set. That's not what we do. And if you look at the 103 movement, that has 49 jewels. They have to be set by hand, by somebody who enjoys what they're doing, who's motivated, who wants to get better at it, even though they might have done it for many years.
Yeah, 100%. It's still, and I don't want it to sound flippant, because whenever we talk prices and watches, we can all sound flippant, but it's still astounding to me the prices that you charge for your watches for what you deliver. So your pricing, correct me if I'm wrong, from about 9,500 to about 15,500 Swiss francs.
Yes. That's for non-bespoke watches, yes.
Yeah, and this is Swiss price. So for people who are non-Swiss, it's actually less because you don't pay the VAT tax. That's amazing. It genuinely, if you think about what a mainstream brand offers for a mass-produced watch, price level-wise, that's astounding that you guys are a small team with 3 watchmakers doing hands-on stuff. That is incredible. As we said, we don't want to get flippant about pricing because money is money and all of that. But for people who are in the in the pleasure of buying watches, those are very reasonable prices for what you get from a Swiss made watch with all Swiss components, apart from the case in Germany. But that's quite a feat to achieve. Well done to you. So hopefully people listening definitely check that out. That's crazy.
Not immune to what is happening around us, and prices all across Switzerland are going up for anything you
Of course.
If things continue as they do, we might have to increase our prices in the next year. But I believe it's still a high value you get. And that was the proposition from the beginning.
Right.
If you pay price X for the watch, it should have a value of at least X.
But I have to say, once in a while, we are surprised when we see what's the cost of certain watches compared and what's in it compared to our price. So sometimes we just astonished.
But it must be frustrating for someone in the industry like yourself, because you know what things cost to make, roughly what components cost and what go and the level of production and the labor cost and all that, and how much I would imagine would be very frustrating. So I know that in my industry, which is not watchmaking, I certainly can tell. You can always separate the done well with integrity and value it put into the product versus, shall we say, bullshit pricing.
Yeah, but then again, we're not selling commodities in our industry.
Sure.
If you want to know the time, take out your phone.
Yeah. Of course.
And you
of
know
course.
The time,
of
obviously.
Of course.
So what we find is that there is often an evolution in watch buying or watch collecting.
Of course.
And once you start doing what so many collectors do nowadays, they look into watchmaking, they try to understand what brands are about, how watches are made, where they are made. Very often they look at segments of certain brands and say, okay, this part of the brand, not interesting for me anymore. That watch, that's an interesting one because that's where they still make a good watch. And then they find the independence. And what you're wearing, Oxen Junior, not many people find that But right. once they found it, they're hooked. They mm. understand the people behind it. They see the effort that has gone into making something that looks quite simple, but that does still an amazing job. And they understand how much work must have gone into making those few pieces every year.
Yes, it's about the same, about the same level.
Companies like Zeitfinker.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. very simple.
And it's, for God's sake, those kind of journalists or enthusiasts are getting more and more sophisticated, and they do a kind of a, yeah, and investigative research. If they recommend something, you can rely on because they really know what they do.
Well, it's very interesting. And once again, we don't need to go down this rabbit hole, but certainly one of the reasons we as a group of enthusiasts and watchmakers and clever people and me started this sort of thing, this Fifth Wrist group, was very much that what we got sick of as consumers of media, if you like, was the paid advertorial content. So the problem we found was you couldn't find an objective voice to say, this is good, this is less good. Everything was great and everything was paid for, essentially, still is in most watch media, but little things done with integrity, the companies like yours, for example, weren't featured at all because you weren't paying for the content in some ways.
Yeah, and integrity doesn't have to be expensive. There are beautiful watches at 500 Swiss francs and you get exactly what you pay for. You don't get less.
100%. And one of the joys that we have is actually very much that, featuring guys, anyone from Helios at $600 all the way up to whoever it is, right? Absolutely. So integrity comes at every price level, and the cool, interesting, worthwhile things watch-wise get made at every price level, as long as they are made well, priced right, and made with integrity. 100%. 100%.
And if you live long enough, you always see that integrity pays off. And yes. The live long enough part is important there.
Yes, I think it's
the same in journalism, as you mentioned, it's the same in watch retailing.
Sure. How long do I still have to make it?
Oh, you're old. You won't see it.
So get Peter's watches now. So order now.
Yeah.
This is an urgent appeal.
The point is, those journalists, like, let's say, Angus from Escapement, the UK,
Angus Davies, yeah.
that really yeah. talk to people that don't just take a press release and need yeah. it a little bit, and then they have a wonderful thing to churn out on the business class sure. flight back from the event sure. in Catania or whatever. Those journalists, they don't get the attention.
Yes.
But those are the journalists people turn to when they really get into the hobby.
Hopefully.
When they really yeah. want to find things out. And it's the same with retailers. We will see a lot of retailers leaving the market. I would think right. 80% of the retailers will not be there anymore in 15 years. And that sure. sounds horrific. But all the large brands, the conglomerates, they're using them at the moment as outlets. And at some point, they will throw the switch and do everything direct after they have milked what they are good for. And the small yes. independent ones, those who look at independent brands that really look at what the customer wants or might want, and they make suggestions. They will show you a harbouring or something that they yeah. don't see every day. Those are the ones that will survive.
Yeah, I think you're right.
How do you... Sorry, Roman.
Wait, Klaus. No, you go, Klaus. You go.
This just reminded me of a question I recently had with somebody else is... many of the independent watches, you have to see them in your hands to really appreciate them. The problem for small independent brands is they cannot go to the large trade shows. Baselworld, they at least had a kind of area where small independents were, but Baselworld is not existing anymore. Do you have any ideas or even plans for getting your watches to see or to make people see your watches somewhere on exhibitions or on road shows or something?
Yeah, we occasionally do that. So maybe a little bit of history here. When we started off, we worked with many retailers, some of the large retailers at the time. But what we immediately found is they don't know how to sell watches.
Yeah,
100%.
They had a lot of pressure, and that pressure is enormous nowadays from the large groups that told them, if you have that, you don't need my top brand anymore. Do you still need the other one, that little one, Zeitfinker there? You still need yeah. that? I thought so.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, wow. These okay. things happened, but very often the main problem was they would expect us to do the marketing and then give a rebate.
Oh, wow.
When the internet for watches got bigger, obviously you could find that watch at that price from all over the world.
Sure.
No effort whatsoever. If somebody wanted one, they would ship it. But there was no effort involved. Mm-hmm. About 8 years ago, we said, this does not make sense for us. We cannot sell our watches at these prices and still give a margin to anybody.
Sure.
So that's why we sell our watches direct. And we have a few partners that understand what we're doing. We do small series of special design watches as well. But most of it is direct. And we participate in small fairs.
Oh, you do actually?
Yes.
Okay.
So our partners, like Albert says, most of the time what they work with is bespoke watches. But our regular model will be sold straight by ourselves.
But you plan to do, or you actually already do, small fairs and things like this?
Yes. Very often it's only a day or two. And very often they are not very well known. We might be in New York next year, but we will definitely be in Oslo in February. It's an afternoon.
Yeah, I've heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, we were in Waterford in Ireland. Johnny's watch fair he did in Waterford last year, which was brilliant. I would call it the Davos of watchmaking, because you had Thomas Prescher there, you had Paul Gerber there, you had Vianney Halter there, and whoever went there, they could talk to all of these guys and more as long as they wanted.
Cool.
And they could go to dinner with them, and then next day they could talk to them again.
Amazing.
That makes so much more sense for us than a show where you have a 3x3 meter and people walk past your booth.
No, that's exactly the way to go. I didn't know that thing in Waterford, but I think that's exactly the way the independent industry should go and do much more things like that in Germany, in France, in Switzerland.
But that's
I'm egoistic here, close to where I am. Sorry?
That's the point, Klaus. As you said, as more such kind of events will establish or will be established by somebody who starts to do it, as more the independence will be part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for us, it's all about the people. We did a show in Finland last year. And we didn't go there to sell watches necessarily. First of all, we liked the guy who organized it.
Right? Yeah. Oh, Klaus, we have no chance. We've lost them already, but go on.
Yeah. Plus you're very far away. We would come see you. You look fairly...
Please.
Fairly decent and nice.
That's only in the morning, so we'll have to do an early show, but that's fine.
We can do morning show.
Light helps a lot. Light helps a lot.
Yeah,
that's right.
No, but
seriously, it's so we went to Finland, and this show was brilliant. It was really fun. Mm. It was a fun 2 days. Met lots of really interested people who took photos of the watches, who touched them, who tried them on, but who asked questions that nobody would ever ask in a classic retailer.
It's not luxury events which are popped up or blown up. It's strictly about watchmaking. So it's just a get together. Show me your watches. You have a little arrangement on your table. People can really take a close look at your watches. Mm. And you don't have a representative or representing booths and a glimmer world. No, it's strict watchmaking.
Certainly for me as an enthusiast, and particularly an enthusiast of independent watchmaking, Albert, like you said, it's all about the people. It's often less important what the watch is, what it looks like, whatever. It's actually more about why it's made. And I find the watch brands I connect to the most are when there's a charismatic or passionate person behind the brand who can actually explain, we made it like this because whatever it is. And even if it's not my aesthetic alignment, you often fall in love with the story or the reason or the person. And even if I don't buy it, I will tell everybody around that I know, you know what, you should check out these guys. Really cool, really quirky or whatever, because it's that humanity in the watch that we lose through the big faceless conglomerate. 100, absolutely. I could not agree more. And we will absolutely have to get you over to Australia.
The authenticity.
Actually, Roman, I was talking about Germany, not Australia here.
No one's going to go to Germany, Klaus. You've already burned that bridge when you dumped on their region the staff. Gone. That's gone.
We will go see Roman. Forget it.
Exactly. I am worth a 24-hour flight. You might not be.
But that's exactly the point. It's about respect. And that's why independent watchmakers very often have a very good relationship. How did you do that? Who's your supplier for this component? Exactly. Why did that not work? How did you solve it? Exactly. And then you send somebody over because they would probably like their watch.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
I think it's so much about people that we at the moment wouldn't know how to hire somebody that can get the same thing across the founders get across.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, we should talk.
Yeah. Which means you will eventually see us in Australia.
We have that on record now, Your Honor. So that's a verbal binding contract. So excellent. Let's talk about availability. So we're living in the kind of a, in some ways, an indie watch bub. There is overheated. There's some regions of the independent horology that are quite overheated. And there's some also some watchmakers who are closing their books. So Gronefeld's no accepting orders. Roger Smith, I think, is not accepting orders or 10-year waiting list or something. How are you guys tracking with orders? Are you still open? Books are open? What's the likely delivery time if a watch gets ordered now? That kind of stuff, practicalities.
So what we're hoping for is obviously that people will like and buy our watches.
100%.
And we're also hoping we will never be hyped.
Okay, great. Done. We can guarantee that.
No, it's serious.
No, that's seriously.
No, it's good. It's good. That's a lovely.
Because thing. After the hype, you will.
Exactly. 100%. I could not agree more. Exactly.
So we want people to buy our watches because they either understand what we're doing or they like us. So that's difficult. Or they like the watches a lot, but not because somebody tells them, you now have to buy that watch because the is not available.
Yes.
Buy that one and it will increase in price.
Yes.
We hope we never get that.
Yes.
Having said that, we currently have a delivery time of about 4 months.
Yep, right.
Four or five months. You can order any watch. For some watches, it might be slightly longer. But now, Roman, since you are getting us excellent Australian watchmakers, we might be able to reduce that delivery time a little bit.
I said Australian watchmakers. I don't remember saying excellent. I heard Australian. I was going to send you people, like just random people. We need to thin out the population a little bit here, particularly out of Brisbane and Queensland in particular, which is a state. Probably like the state where Klaus lives in, our equivalent.
He lives in Frankfurt. That's if we didn't have Frankfurt, we didn't have a metropolis.
Okay.
We still need that.
But that's great. So because do you have what? Because you make your watches to order. Is that right? I remember reading
yes,
that on the website.
Yes, that's correct. So the only exception for that is if we partner with somebody and they would, for example, have 10 watches made.
Yes,
and we
of course.
Make those watches why the partner offers them to watch enthusiasts.
Yeah, of course.
But otherwise,
like the Chrono Tempus example, or
yes, like Chrono Tempus, or we have a partner in the Gulf region who regularly makes or issues bespoke watches. We might do in addition for Japan at some point. That is the only exception. Otherwise, you order a watch and then we start making.
Amazing. That's amazing to me. And what do you offer customizations for individual orders or not? And I'm only asking that because we will get asked that. So I'm only asking that now.
Yes, to a certain degree, yes. But since we make everything in Switzerland and also have the dials made at partners in Switzerland, we go through the whole process. It's not just we click a button and the dial looks completely different.
Yes.
If you're looking at a different dial color, that is for some models relatively easy.
Yes.
If you're looking for different dial design, different dial materials, other modifications, that can get brutal. So it makes sense if you want to do that to find a few friends who have the exact same taste as you.
Yes. Yes.
Then,
and convince
it will be a lot easier to get to a price that is still acceptable.
If you end up doing it just once.
Yeah, of course, because it's equally just as hard to make one than it is to make 10 for you guys. That's right.
So the question is, the authenticity and value is, of course, a lot in our movement. And if you just want to do slight design changes, and which require a lot of work and investment, but whether it's worth it just to have this little, for one piece.
Sure. Oh, that's very, very cool. And probably as we're just thinking about it, as we start to wrap up, what's the future plans? What are you focusing on now? What's the 2023-24 looking like for you? Where do you see the brand going, or where do you want to go?
So we, being a small company, we don't have a marketing department. We don't have anybody telling us what the color trend will be next year.
The mood on the ground.
The easy answer is we will hopefully do just a little more of what we're doing today. Beautiful. We're doing it just as well as today.
And faster. Yeah.
And maybe in some areas a bit faster, because we have your Australian watchmakers.
Australian watchmakers, that's right. That's the motivated workforce.
Seriously, yeah. We will probably bring out new dial in the next 12 to 18 months. We will have some variations that we like a lot internally. And let's see if we can get them issued by the end of next year, by maybe beginning of 2024. But it's completely useless to make announcements, because the same watchmakers that are making watches for our customers are working together with Peter on new designs, on new creations. And I think it would also be a little dishonest if we told somebody your watch will be made within 4 months, but it might be 6 because we're fiddling around with something we want to talk to somebody else.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And actually, what we should talk about before we finish up is the model that you've got on your wrist. That's 273 with a sapphire Fume dial, and there's also a blue sapphire dial variant as well. Maybe tell us a little bit about that watch, and I definitely encourage everyone listening to go and have a look at 273 Fume Sapphire and blue Sapphire models. That's a very unusual dial. I don't know any other brand that does it. Maybe tell us a little bit about the evolution of that and how you came up with that concept.
It was, I think, also during a dinner.
Right.
And the discussion was, why do you decorate the front of your movements? Nobody will ever see that.
And Gotcha.
Also, the backsides of many components are decorated, and nobody ever sees that. So you start a discussion, and then we played around with completely transparent sapphire dials, but they were very difficult to read. So the time
impossible.
Was immediately visible there.
Yes.
And we settled on this Fume tone, which is not a lacquer, but it's a deposition process. It's actually quite complicated to make this whole,
I was going to ask.
Thing. Yeah. And again, no shortcuts and a lot of raised eyebrows when we tell somebody from the industry. but it's what it is. And these watches, especially the blue one, they go from solid color to nearly completely transparent. So if you hold it in the sun, you still have a certain tint of blue or this grayish, but you basically see the front of the movement and the patented date mechanism. But when you're in very diffuse light, it's dark gray. It looks like nearly a solid dial, especially the blue one. And we really like it. It's one of our best sellers.
I guess so, yeah.
Amazing. It's an amazing
people see it, getting really fascinated. And it looks in real even better than on the best photo.
Yeah, that's why I said road shows. That's small exhibitions or whatever.
So when people are, when we meet people on those road shows and we say, you already say in the exhibition, oh, it's great. Yeah, we say, let's get out. And now you see it under daylight. You're going crazy.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing.
Have a lot of facets by the angle. If you tilt the light conditions, it's something. It's very nice.
Yeah, very much so. And once again, quite a brave thing to do as a small company to invest in the R&D and pursue that idea, because I would imagine it would be a very expensive process to prototype envisage and execute what you wanted to achieve.
But it was a logical step. However, we didn't work on a date by which we would have to have the watch ready. It was ready when it was ready.
It was ready,
Cool. It's phenomenal. It is a phenomenal. I like all your watches because they definitely tap into the aesthetic that I like, that sort of classical watchmaking done really well. But the 273 Fume and blue sapphires just take it up to a whole other level.
And what is pretty interesting, and I may sound like I'm advertising watches here, but
please do. You have a 5-minute
case
window.
It's a nice interlude between polished and glass blasted areas. So this watch, depending on the light again, looks quite modern, but it's also a dress watch. So I have a red at the moment, but if you put a dark gray bracelet on it or black gray, It looks solid in a theater or in an opera house.
Ah, okay. Right.
And then you go to a restaurant with bright lights and it looks very modern.
Ah. There you go.
This was our goal, to achieve that, to have a case which is iconic to the brand. At the beginning, we were not sure whether we would achieve that. Let's get a nice case, develop it. But finally, we achieved it, to get a case which is classy and sporty at the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's iconic for Zeitwinkel too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you see
the
case, you can tell by the case, this is a Zeitwinkel.
And the other thing we should say is you've got, I think, 50 meter water resistance, which is practical. Because a lot of dress watches are 30 meter nothing. You just sneeze on it and it has to go back for service. Whereas 50 meters is usable, not swimmable, but at least every day you don't have to worry about it, which is a cool thing to do because most...
One good advantage would be using a double O-ring seal on the crown. So even if you forget to push the crown, it's still sealed. Mm. You should not swim with it, but when you fall by coincidence into water, it would still be sealed.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's these little things. The more I talk to watchmakers or anybody creative, the final design is often a combination of many little things done really well and many little things done with thought. And the more I talk to you guys, it's all of these things are coming together, that every detail has been thought over and improved and designed and evolved and redesigned. And the final product is this really harmonious, cohesive, beautiful thing. Bravo to you, because that's a very hard thing to achieve.
Thank you very much.
Now, Klaus, I don't have any more questions. I'm about to go and scroll on a website and look for models to buy. So we should start to move towards closing. Do you have any other questions, or do you guys have anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like us to talk about?
Don't get us started.
Right, okay. Save it for episode 2, the return of Zeitwinkel.
Yes, let's do episode 2 in half a year or in a year.
Absolutely.
But seriously, if you want to do it again, we can talk.
Love to, 100%.
We'll make the next episode when I eventually visit you in Saint-Imier.
Yeah.
And we'll record it from there, Roman. What do you think?
Sounds good
to me. Because that was my original plan.
Yeah. Yep. And episode 3.
And then we'll do a roadshow in Klaus's home and garden.
Frankfurt's not bad.
Yeah. And then episode 4.
I was trying to talk you into make something here in Frankfurt. Not in my home. I'm living in Frankfurt, so I've got 3 rooms in the 5th floor without an elevator. You don't want to do an exhibition here. But,
wow. But episode
if you want to have a Zeitwinkel, people have to climb the summit.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to climb something.
No way around it.
That's right. And episode 4 will be Roadshow Melbourne, essentially recruitment drive. We'll set up watchmaking benches and you can just trial people over it. You look like you can hold a screwdriver. Let's see what you can do.
You take it on Klaus too.
Yeah. Somebody has to carry the suitcases. That's right. Good thinking. No, look,
Klaus is probably a better watchmaker than me.
Certainly not. I don't even get a nail into the wall. But if you need somebody to carry your boxes to Australia, I'll be there. I've been in Australia once. This was 30 years ago, and this is not a metaphor. It was 30 years ago, or 35, I think.
Yeah, it's so a short prison
time for
sentence
me to come back.
And then sent back. It was one of those. He was deported here, served his time. We sent him back to Europe. So now he's a free. He's never reoffended since. So that's good. Look, guys, as we start to wrap up, one of the things that this has been such an enjoyable conversation. One of the things we do is we ask our guests and ourselves some recommendations about whether it's Instagram or books or things to essentially enhance and broaden our listeners' horizons. So if you've got something that you could recommend, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
So keen to hear.
We have a friend, Sherpa_watches.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You would like to recommend
Fantastic.
Martin.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, previous guest as well. Yeah. We had him on the show when his book came out. Lovely chap.
And, of course, Garrick, but we already mentioned it.
We can mention Garrick 2 or 3 times. Dave's a champion. They're doing really cool things. They've got their new S6 out. Definitely check them out. Awesome people, awesome watches. And they've just done a collaboration with Nicholas from Fears as well.
Fears.
Which
Very
is
cool
a
colorway.
Really cool watch as well, and previous guest, so friend of the show. We know some good people. It's just good. It's really makes me feel really nice. We have good people, which is awesome. Brilliant. Thank you. Great Very recommendation. Good.
So I also have one recommendation myself and one from Max, our third founder.
Yeah, please.
And if you don't allow me to, I will sell mine as a sponsor. So you will have to
go for it. Yeah, no, go for it. Yeah, no, please do.
Okay. So the one that Max and I would like to recommend is a collector and watch enthusiast called Bob's Into Watches on Instagram. And Bob is one of those rare examples of the social media watch community that really means it. So he really likes watches. And he really interacts because he likes watches. And he doesn't interact because if I like yours, you like mine.
Yes.
And we met with him several times. And I would probably say from what I can judge, he's a great human being as well. So if you want to interact with somebody who really likes watches, it's Bob's Into Watches. And the watch company I would like to recommend, who also sponsored our whiskey writer's tears today, is Brian Leach from Sidereus Watches in Ireland.
Yes.
And Brian is a designer by trade, or originally a designer, and he wanted to build a watch and modeled it after a UNESCO World Heritage that is 5,000 years old in Ireland and that keeps time.
Wow.
That shows you certain times at certain days of the year. And the way he builds watches is a little bit like Sherpa. He puts a lot of heart into it. It's very personal for him. And he doesn't take shortcuts either. And he's also a very good human being. So if you like watches, look at Sidereus Watches.
Fantastic recommendation. I have heard of Brian. We haven't had the pleasure of meeting him yet, but he's certainly on our radar as, once again, another good human in the watchmaking industry, which is always a nice thing to find. So that's brilliant. Thank you, guys. That's fantastic. Fantastic recommendations.
Thank you.
All right, Klaus, we'll pass over to Frankfurt.
Yeah, my recommendation is comparatively now may seem a little bit random. It's just one Instagram account I found and I find very funny because it's not the usual watches there. I don't know him personally. He's called Cosmopack, Cozmopak. You know him already, Roman?
I do. Yeah, no, I know who he is. Great guy. Yeah.
Okay. I just like his feed because it's not the usual watch which you see here. And obviously that's what I like.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. He's got some really cool indie watches. He's got a J.N. Shapiro watch with a custom engraved case as well. Lovely guy. So it's a great recommendation. He's a champion. So that's really good. I'll do mine. Mine's not going to be as good either, but interesting. So I've been reflecting about this idea of craft and how horology has to survive and good people doing cool things. I found this. It'll be an Instagram recommendation. It's atmos_atelier.de. So it's a German person. So it's a collector and restorer and occasionally seller of JLC Atmos clocks. So they've been Atmos clocks of various things. So they collect. So this guy collects, restores, and sometimes sells them. And I've been getting really into clocks lately. Because I think it's a parallel world to wristwatches, but there's some really fascinating things. And Atmos kind of holds a dear place in my heart. So it's one of those, just a shout out to somebody who's found a niche they're clearly passionate about and they're just doing their thing in clocks. So
he's strictly doing Atmos watches.
Yeah, just clocks, yeah. Just Atmos clocks.
It's a great invention. It's fantastic. By just changing the temperature a little bit, you wind up the clocks great.
It's the next thing to a perpetual mobile you can find. I would have one. I love my wife, but if I would not have my wife, I would have an Atmos, but she doesn't let me have one.
You know what to do, Klaus. If you want that Atmos clock, you know what to do. Look, Peter, Albert, it's been so wonderful to speak with you. So it's always nice when the guests exceed expectations, and you certainly have exceeded that in both sense of humor and also passion, commitment to what you do. So hopefully that got both of those things got to our listeners. And I definitely encourage everyone to check out Zeitwinkel because you do some really cool stuff. So thank you so much for joining me and Klaus.
Thank you.
A huge pleasure and a privilege.
Thank you, Norman, Klaus.
So last thing we often say is with Fifth Wrist, we set this up as a platform by enthusiasts and for enthusiasts. So for anyone listening, if you want to join us, contribute, write reviews, get your own Oxen Junior special edition, whatever it is, come on the podcast, get in touch, follow us, Fifth Wrist, on Facebook and Instagram, or on our website at fifthwrist.com. You can subscribe, all the jizz. Follow me. I'm at Times Roman AU. My Valiant co-host Klaus is at Tapir FM. And our wonderful guests today, Albert and Peter, are at zeitwinkel.ch and zeitwinkel.ch on the website. So both Instagram and website are the same. Definitely check them out. They do some really cool stuff with a lot of heart and integrity. Thank you for joining us today. We always say stay on time.
Fifth Wrist is by the community for the community. We would love you to join the crew via our group chat on Slack. Email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and join the movement.